Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And this hour of the program, the future of the family farm in Wisconsin and in the country.
Yeah, you go down to the market with your money in your hand. Buy food from the family farmer and keep him working on the land. Yeah, homegrown.
Aid is having its 25th anniversary celebration in Milwaukee on October 2nd. Of course, it's been working hard for 25 years to keep farmers on the land, according to Willie Nelson. He's one of the founders of Farm Aid, along with John Mellencamp. They are growing hope for America through the good food they produce, he says, the economies they build, and their care for the soil and water. Family farms are the backbone of our country, and right now we need them more than ever. This hour of the program, we're going to be talking about family farms here in the state of Wisconsin. We have two guests with us, both in the farming business. John Kinsman is a farmer in Sauk County. Starts, according to a bio about him, starts each morning with a hearty country breakfast before pulling on his boots and beginning farm chores on his organic dairy farm. He is 84 years old now. He has a partner who does the milking and the heavy farm work, but he still puts in 14-hour days feeding the calves, maintaining the barn and pastures, and rotating fences. The Kinsman family purchased their farm shortly after World War II, and it's remarkable what they've done in the subsequent years. John is also the founder and president of Family Farm Defenders. John, thank you so much for being with us this hour. Hi.
Oh.
Hello. Nice to have you here. Also joining us to talk about family farms is Kristen Cordett. Kristen is the owner of Blue Moon Community Farms. She graduated from college in 1999 and never thought about farming as a possible career. She thought she'd have a job related to her environmental studies major at school and tackle the challenges of improving natural resources management. But she found that the people that she was most in contact with about environmental planning and resource management were farmers. The story goes on. She was hired as an intern at Roxbury Farm in New York and began her career as a farmer at the age of 23. She has worked with a program, we'll talk about this hour, the CRAFT program, linking prospective farmers like Kristen to farmers who teach and mentor young people how to farm. And she is now a farmer and is our guest this hour as well. Kristen, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Kathleen. It's a pleasure.
Great to have you here. John, let's start with you. How did you get Farm Aid to come to Wisconsin for the 25th anniversary? Was that something that you solicited, or did they just decide to pay attention to Wisconsin?
I didn't do it, but I've worked with Farm Aid for many years, and we've done a lot of things together, and there's a lot of things that have happened here that made them want to come here. And one of the things was the dairy crisis, and Wisconsin being the dairy state, that they thought this is the place to come and to concentrate not only on other issues, but especially dairy in Wisconsin. So we're happy they're here. But we've had a long history of working together, and I have fielded calls. They get desperate calls from dairy farmers in the Midwest, and they will turn them over to our organization, the Family Farm Defenders. And these farmers are pretty desperate, and usually they're farmers that are losing their land or losing their farms. And so we actually become sort of counselors, which helps them a lot to know that somebody will listen to them.
Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about that crisis in just a moment. Kristen, what does it mean to family farmers in Wisconsin to have this massive concert here?
Oh, I think it's just putting a spotlight on what's happening here in Wisconsin, not only the crisis that we're in a lot of ways, but the tremendous amount of hope that the small family farms in Wisconsin represent. We've got, for us, state of our size, more CSA farms than almost any other state in the country, and I think that says a lot about the interest and support for local foods and small family farms in the state.
So for those who are not familiar with CSA, what does that mean?
Oh, sure. Community-supported agriculture is a program that a lot of small, diverse farms like myself have developed as a way to not only market our products, but make connections direct with consumers by creating a way for them to put forth the financial backing of the farm to buy a membership in the spring so that the farmers can pay their upfront costs and then reap the harvest throughout the season. So we're about halfway through our CSA harvest season right now, and it's been a good year. So people are happy and eating well.
That's good. That's a way to live. John, what does it mean to be a family farm as opposed to what?
Industrial agriculture or factory farms. There are a number of names they use for the bigger ones. But for our family farm, it has a sort of loose definition, but it's mainly a farm that is mostly owned by the farmer and family. They provide most of the labor and management. So this is what a family farm. It can be a farm like she just described. Maybe it's a half acre, but it employs people and intense farming like she just described, which is excellent. But it can also be in the West, maybe 1,000 acres or more. But it's a family, a farm owned by and controlled and worked by the family. And there's many, the people at Farm Aid know that family farmers are the backbone of the health and the economy of this nation. So for 25 years, they've been consistently bringing this message, and there's a lot more to it than just what they, in the food part, but they are also probably one of the best means of combating climate change.
Mm. How so?
We use very little fossil fuel. For instance, I'm an organic dairy farmer, and my cows do the work. They are in pasture, so they walk to their feed. I don't have to haul it in and put it in such storage and feed them. They also leave the manure out in the pasture, in the paddock that I have for that time. They get fresh pasture every 12 hours, so I move a fence so that they eat that area, and then it regrows. But in the meantime, they leave that manure, which is valuable, the fertilizer. I buy no chemical fertilizer. I use no pesticides, herbicides, and so no GMOs, of course. And so there's this type of farming. Carbon footprint is about zero from a number of researchers who have looked this over. While it's a tremendous amount when it's a confinement operation where everything is hauled in, everything's hauled out, animals are in confinement, or in the case of crop farming, it's for export, and it's not a thing that helps the local economy or the state economy.
Yeah. Kristen, tell me about the kind of farming you're doing.
Sure. Well, we run a diversified vegetable farm and then a collection of pastured animals sort of complement the operation, are in rotation with our vegetables. So we farm intensively. We have about 4 acres of vegetables that we market both through our CSA program and the farmers markets in Madison. And then we raise pastured heritage turkeys, broilers, and laying hens, and a few pigs out on the pasture as well, and they've been proven to be, as John said, just a wonderful, hard-working machine in terms of tilling the soil, aerating, fertilizing, controlling bugs, doing all that great stuff that a natural system provides. So we're seeing the results of having the poultry on the land when we bring vegetables back into that spot and see just the beautiful produce we can grow from that natural fertility.
Mm-hmm. The Family Farm Material says this, John. I'd like for you to comment and fill this in for us. A thriving, sustainable family farm system will only be possible if supported by government policy that encourages widespread ownership of land and restores competition to the buying, exporting, packing, and processing industries in all commodities. Tell me about government policy, what it is now, and what it perhaps needs to be.
Do you want me to answer first?
Yes, please.
I've got a long history.
I know you do.
As an example, the free trade policies, that we've had 25 years of NAFTA, and that's been a race to the bottom in farm prices, labor wages, and environmental degradation. And so we need to change that. It's a competition with the oppressed, underpaid farmers and peasants in Mexico and Central America. And it's a race to the bottom, as I said. But look, our farm programs promote much of the same, and they, in turn, subsidize the big farmers. I get no subsidies. And yet the big ones get millions of dollars to raise corn now, which should have been in family farms on the hills here, and it's being dumped below the cost of production and destroying Mexican agriculture or agriculture in other Central American countries. So what we need constructive cooperation, which everyone is a winner, instead of this destructive competition where there are a few big winners in Cargill's, Monsanto's, and those that control our food supply, Kraft, and those few winners and many, many losers. So we have to reverse this. I'm not saying we need a lot of subsidies, but there's no level playing field. These big ones are able to continue to pollute and destroy other agriculture because of huge subsidies. And I guess maybe what they're saying is that maybe to promote the type of agriculture that Christine is talking about, or Kristen, and what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. And tell me, you've been farming for a long time, John. Was there a golden age when policies were really in sync with making sure that farmers were getting a fair buck for all the work that they were doing and people were getting good, wholesome food?
There were. In the 70s, there was a fairly good time. And then prior to that, it's been ups and downs, but it was not, what should I say? It's always government intervention in the wrong way, or supposedly helping in the wrong way. But what we're finding is the survivors are people who are farming like I am. And I have been working with farmers all over the world. I've been to Southeast Asia. I've been to Africa several times, and I've been Europe many times, and Canada and Mexico and so on. And we're finding that there are many sustainable, organic means of farming that have kept this earth in a healthy condition for thousands of years. And there's many of these that we need and are using now to produce. And I have to say that the type of farming that Kristen and I are talking about will produce more per unit than any of these big ones with
really?
All the inputs and all the subsidies. And
mm-hmm.
that is a myth that you have to have these herbicides and pesticides and GMOs to get food. That's not true. It's a race to the bottom. And the Union of Concerned Scientists have done a study and showing that it's something about negative yields. The yields are going down. And it's causing desertification of our soils and of our climates, not our climates, but our earth. And it's even happening in this state where the wrong kind of farming is aging the soil by thousands of years. So we need to be looking at what produces more and more for the future, not only for the future, but now. And it can be done.
Mm-hmm. Kristen, what kind of government policy could help you as a small farmer in Wisconsin?
Well, I agree with John in that it's not a subsidy so much that farms like ours need, but a level playing field.
Mm-hmm.
I think it says a lot for the successes that small family farms have had, both in and out of the organic movement, that they're successful despite this unlevel playing field. And there are little glimmers of hope in the farm bill. There's little programs that indicate that someone there is thinking about small, diverse vegetable farms or keeping things at a human scale so that local economies can possibly be revived through more farms, more people making their living from farms. But I agree, it's simply that problem that particularly in terms of commodities in our country, there's just no level playing field.
Let's welcome phone calls for both of our guests. We're talking about family farming here in the state of Wisconsin. Our conversation prompted in part by the 25th anniversary of Farm Aid, which is taking place at Miller Park on October 2nd. Willie Nelson, John Mellencamp, Neil Young, Dave Matthews to headline the All-Star Music and Food Festival. And we're looking at the state of farming in the state of Wisconsin right now, the government policies, how family farmers can be helped to survive, what their plight is right now, the difference between really large-scale agricultural farming and family farming, what we mean by family farming, getting the food from family farms to people. We'll have to talk about some of the urban movements that are taking place, too. One of the reasons I know they selected Milwaukee was because of the work of Will Allen here in Milwaukee, who's been recognized nationally for his contributions. So here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email address, if you'd like to use that, is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
I hate to say the farmer was the last of a dying breed.
Farm Aid coming to Milwaukee Miller Park on October 2nd, and we're talking about farming in Wisconsin. For 25 years now, Farm Aid has provided support services to farm families in crisis, and they also have a resource network connecting farmers to an extensive network of more than 500 organizations across the country that help farmers find the resources they need to access new markets. We have two organic farmers with us this hour. John Kinsman is a farmer in Sauk County, founder and president. He is of Family Farm Defenders, and he has traveled all over the world looking at how farming is done in other parts of, other countries on this planet. Kristen Cordett is also with us. Kristen is owner of Blue Moon Community Farms. We have many phone calls coming in, and let's start with Sarah from Zion, Illinois. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Kathleen. I really like this program. I spent a lot of my youth working on organic farms on Oregon.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, great. I like it a lot. But my question is for the dairy farmer in particular, because I must have read this somewhere that that organic dairy farmers are doing actually better than conventional family farmers, dairy farmers, because there's a really high demand for organic dairy products, and that consumers are willing to pay a price that actually reflects the cost of producing the food, which conventional products, like he was saying, because of the subsidies, they pay a price that doesn't really reflect how much work goes into it. So anyway, is that true? Like, if you're a conventional dairy farmer and you switch to organic, will you be more secure?
Yes, but it's expensive to switch. That's the problem. You have to feed organic feeds for 3 years and to transition. And there is some help for that now. But I would say the price does not have to be higher in the grocery store if we had a level playing field, because we are not getting the subsidies that these other confined animal feeding operations, the big ones, the dairy and other. So if the markets were working more direct and without so much money being taken out, the food would be almost the same price. And, of course, you know the value of the food, and there is a very strict regimen that we have to follow to make sure that there's no antibiotics, there's no hormones. Everything is done correctly, and so there's a lot of work to be done, but our biggest ally are people like you, the consumers, that tell the government. As farmers, all farmers, we're less than 1% of the population, about the lowest in the world percentage-wise, and so we have no voice, and so the politicians do not pay any attention to us. But they do pay attention to the urban people, who are the other 99%. And this is how we can get more of this done. And also, the factory farmers, the industrial farmers, have their big lobbying groups, and they pay millions of dollars to congressional and other politicians to get their voice, while we have none of that.
Thank you, Sarah, very much for the call. Let's go to Ann from Madison. Hi, Ann.
Hi. Well, everybody can do their part. Wisconsin's especially good because it has a lot of co-ops that sell local farm produce and so forth. That's not possible in a lot of urban states where it's harder, but it should certainly be worked at. But, of course, when you say factory farming, this isn't really farming at all. The companies that are profiting from factory farms are mostly chemical companies, the genetic engineers and the manufacturers of bizarre pesticides and various toxins like Cargill and Monsanto and Archer Daniels Midland. And what I think is most important is, in a healthy economy, the cost of living of the producers of goods is the same as the cost of living of the consumers of those goods. So nobody can make an enormous, obscene profit. And what these trade agreements do is they want, because of the, you know, getting rid of tariffs, they allow labor to be done in countries where the cost of living is maybe, you know, a tenth to a 50th of the cost of living, say, here or in Western Europe. And then the goods are sold here, and the difference is pocketed as profit by these enormous companies. It's really, it's a system that has to be gotten rid of, and I frankly don't think things like NAFTA can be tweaked. I think they have to be repealed.
Kristen.
Certainly. I agree with that comment 100%. You know, we're in a state of crisis in terms of the international markets for grain and commodities. Fortunately, I mean, in my farming business, I guess I have the luxury of being outside of those systems for the most part. I mean, they affect everyone, but as a consumer, I'm very concerned about what's happening internationally.
Here's an email, and let's start. The answer is with you, Kristen, from Nora in Viola. My husband and I purchased 40 acres in Richland County. We're interested in farming about 5 acres and getting some animals. We started slowly this year with chickens. Where do we go to become classified as a farm? Any suggestions for the best way to get started? You've been through this, Kristen.
Oh, that's an interesting question. Yeah, where's the line where you're finally a farmer, right?
Right.
I would say, in a way, I sort of came up the ranks of sort of the modern farming education infrastructure, if you will. In the last 20 years or so, there's grown quite a quite a program around the country for training new farmers through internships and on-farm apprenticeships. Outside, for the most part, of the university systems, it's a hands-on, on-farm way of learning. But it's become quite organized, and I think it's really a great way to go if you're thinking about starting a farm or thinking about at least growing food for your family. And what's grown from that system is a network of organizations and workshops and tools for people to access, such as yourselves, that are looking to start up an operation. In my area, I have access to the Madison Area CSA Coalition, which actually represents farms right in Viola, in La Crosse, and all sorts of areas in southern and central Wisconsin, and they have a staff person dedicated to farmer resources and puts together activities and gatherings and workshops to educate new and experienced farmers. The Angelic Organics Learning Center in Northern Illinois is a great resource. And in sort of the Milwaukee area in East Troy, there's Michael Fields Agricultural Institute. All those organizations have been tremendous resources to me to learn new skills, connect with other farmers who are doing things that I want to do or right. Do them better. Yeah,
I would think that it's important to connect with other farmers, too. Is it hard to be a farmer, John? I mean, we've talked about the circumstances that make it difficult to get a fair wage for what you do. But is it hard to learn all the skills?
No. It takes time, and it really takes experience. And I would recommend younger farmers, and I know a number of them that want to farm, and some that are urban. And sometimes the urban farming background is the best, because so for so long a time our farm publications have been dependent on the ads of Cargill, Monsanto, Kraft, and all of these, that they have all the wrong information. And so an urban person coming in sometimes doesn't have all that garbage or baggage to bring with them.
Mm-hmm.
I would recommend they work on a farm for a while, and so they know what they're doing. It's a lot of hard work, but it's very satisfying work because you use your hands, and that's where the dignity comes in. You can see what you're doing. You're working. You get to know the animals personally and the land and all that goes with it, and the how everything works together in the soil of all the millions and billions of microbes necessary they are.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something. I just want to add one other thing to the values of the food, of organic food. We have to demand accountability, because in the past couple of years, Aurora and another big dairy farm out west had thousands of cows. They did not pasture their cows, and the rules were not enforced. And so now we're demanding that happen. So this put a burden and lowered our prices. So it's a continual battle to keep the standards there where they belong. And
right.
I would ask all consumers, when they buy food, ask your grocer or whoever you buy it from, who produced this? How was it produced? And if they can't tell you, say, well, you better find out. Then I'll come back.
That seems like a logical question. I want to talk a little bit more about money here. First, let me thank you, Ann, for your call. FarmAid has released this statistic. The average Milwaukee County farm has gross sales of $103,411, while the average net income per farm is $21,195. That is not very much money, considering all the work that's involved here. How do people survive?
It's impossible. 90% of farmers are dependent on outside income. So they're overworked, they're underpaid, and I'm talking with young farmers who work 20 hours a day, and they're still having a hard time because the conventional dairy is priced at about one-half the cost of production, and organic is still way below the cost of production. So a person with a lot of debts will even have a hard time with that. And so what are we getting? We're getting terrible accidents in the last 2 weeks. One young man, 35 years old, was working late with his chopper box unloading, and he got his leg caught in the or takeoff. It tore his leg off. Ooh. He bled to death. And his father found him. The leg was still going round and round on the power takeoff. And another one, the same week, all of these are within 40 miles of me, and I knew some of them. A 50-year-old man, the bull, he was attacked him and would have killed him, but he actually threw him over the fence and saved him. So these are things that are happening all the time. And so there's these overworked farmers with poor machinery. They can't afford to get newer machinery. They do not have time to fix it, and it's scary to see what's happening. So we do need to have a better price, and the price is there. It's just that it's the food has been commodified, and it's a long story of how it's now being sold as a lifeless product on the CME. And before that, food was different, and it was not a thing of profit. So the profit is going to people who are making millions and billions, and both the consumer and the farmer could have fair prices if we could control some of this. And if we have knowledge of it, then we can maybe control it. There's one article I would ask you to read, and it was in the July issue of Harper's Magazine. It's called The Food Bubble, okay. And it will explain this very well.
July issue, Harper's The Food Bubble.
Hey.
All right, might be fodder for another talk show. What about you, Kristen? Can you make a living with what you're doing?
I think it's quite possible to make a living running a CSA farm. I'm not quite there. I bought my farm in 2007 after renting for about 5 years, and we bought in Dane County, and we're about 15 miles from Madison. So none of our produce travels more than 15 miles to get to the person who's going to eat it, which I feel really good about. But land prices are very high, and it's been a process of assessing what we can do profitably, and we're getting there. So I think in the next 5 years, I will have a sustainable operation that can sustain me financially as well. But I think, you know, for operations like mine in the CSA movement, it's a little bit of a different picture that it paints. We're working directly with families. We set our prices, and the prices are honest prices. If folks are comparing price tags to what they're seeing in the grocery store at our market stand or our CSA membership fees, they're going to say or could say, "Wow, that's expensive." But my response is that there is no hidden cost. There's no hidden cost in that price. That represents what it cost me to produce this, what it cost me to make a living and pay my own expenses. This is what it costs for you to hire me to steward the land that I own. None of those things are taken for granted or being left behind to be picked up in the healthcare system or in the EPA or anywhere where we're leaving these messes that industrial agriculture has created.
Let's go to Scott from Dyersville, Illinois. Hi, Scott.
Hi. Organic farming is it's a good niche for, and it gives consumers a choice, but there are a lot of us farmers out there that, I mean, we kind of raise hogs and cattle and stuff in confinements, and we take care of the land also, and by, you know, using manure as fertilizer and using our crop as feed. And I just think we're kind of being demonized because we're not organic and we're not extremely small. And if we want to be able to use biofuels in the future, we need to have farming practices that produce large amounts of grain. And if we want cheap food, we have to be able to produce large amounts of meat.
Feed a lot of people, yeah. John, you want to respond?
Sure. Well, he's got a point there to a degree. We've been forced, I work with a lot of farmers of different sizes and types, and they've been forced to be into confinement situations by the way our farm programs go. But I will say this, that there I'm not saying that everybody should organic. I probably gave that impression. But people who are trying to be stewards of the land and take care of things and animals and humanely and so on. But it's this point that got out of hand. Any time that a farmer has too many animals that he has to call the manure animal waste and try to find another way of getting rid of it, there are too many animals on that parcel of land. Because for me and other farmers who are sustainable, that's our most valuable fertilizer. And it's probably the only one. I only add a little rock phosphate, and that is the only fertilizer that I buy, and that's a small amount to balance that manure. So the farmers have been trapped into systems because of changes in farm policy and trade policy, and many of them are caught in systems they cannot get out of. And so it's a slow process to get to a point where you can be more sustainable. And I would certainly recommend it. And in the meantime, we have to live with some of what we have, but we need to be going in that direction.
Anything else, Scott? Scott's gone. Thank you, Scott. And he's calling from Iowa, not Illinois. Can we feed, because we do feed massive numbers of people, can we feed the people that we feed now doing farming the way both you, John, and Kristen are doing?
Yes. There's no doubt of it. In fact, in the past, that is what fed the world. And there were no food shortages when the right kind of farming was done. And this is building up the land and building up, and in fact, it's the best buffer for climate change. And it gets increasingly fertile and productive. And there's actually a surplus of food in the world. It's just that it's controlled by these multinational companies and the traders who want to make a profit on it. But it can be done, but it can't be done immediately because of the way the system's been forced upon people that are almost victims of this type of farming. But I'm absolutely positive that there's more than enough food can be produced with the land becoming increasingly productive if we farm in a sustainable way.
Mm-hmm. Steve in Junction City, hi.
Hello, let me get you off speakerphone here.
Thank you, Steve.
Hi. Hey, I moved out to Wisconsin about 4 years ago as my one galleon attempt to get out of construction. And my wife always wanted to farm, so we moved on to a dairy farm. And we helped with the operation for about a year. We went to FSA. We purchased a farm, and we got up and rolling. And we started off with 60 cows. And we only had 10.5 acres, but we were sitting on 220, and we got to choose who leased the land. And so we made agreements with the people that leased the land to provide feed for us, so on and so forth. The prices were pretty good on milk, coming in like 20, maybe a little plus, and after a year into it, they dropped it down to 9. We talked to FSA about, because we're going in the hole, just flat out going in the hole with 60 cows. And so I wanted to make some changes on the farm, and they came out and they said, well, what you need is more milk in the tank. And so they gave us another 100 grand and bumped us up to 100 cows. Long story short, I'll be foreclosed on and out of my house in February. Mm. We had a grade A dairy. We got 100% on our federal inspections. We got 100% on or 98% on our state inspections. We knew what we were doing. I had a freestall barn. I mean, the place was spotless. I got down to high school skinny, talking about the work out there. It's insane. I mean, I'd pay $5 for a gallon of milk if I knew the farmers get it. And yeah. I don't know why anybody would go into farming because they regulate what they pay you. The same people that gave me the loan turned around the government and brought in $9 milk to wipe me out. And I was even told by one local farmer that I was a virus to the milk industry because I'm bringing in cows into the thing, and they just, it's amazing that there's even people like that. I'm friends with the guy today, but I did let him lease my land 1 year, and he just totally, I've been ripped and reamed by feed prices and everything else, and now I'm working a construction job and looking at, you know, making 20 grand less than I did before I went into farming. And I'm looking at foreclosure in February.
John.
It's insane.
Yeah, John, you want to respond?
This story, I feel so bad because I hear this story all the time, you know, all around me. And really, it's totally unnecessary. Break even is $20 for an average dairy farmer. And what he's experiencing is experienced by hundreds and hundreds of dairy farmers in Wisconsin, plus the rest of the country. And it's all political. It is totally unnecessary.
I agree. And I think the problem can be fixed. You know, I'm 47 years old. What do I do? You know? I mean, what do I do?
Well, you're doing the right thing by letting the public know what's going on. Because I talk to congressmen all the time. We have an office in Washington, D.C. We have one, an international office that I work with in Europe and one in Asia. And then, of course, we have our main office in Madison, and we work for nothing. I never get paid for anything I do. But what we need to do is educate people of what is actually happening to you and why. And they can't change it if they don't know. And Congress does not know. I talk to Russ Feingold several times a year. He's a good friend. And he says that he doesn't often realize how sad it is because he's not hearing that. He doesn't hear from enough people. And, of course,
I even in an attempt to possibly, before they even started foreclosing on me, when they were talking about possibility of selling raw milk, I thought, man, this is great. So I did some research. I went and visited a farm, a guy that sells raw milk. You got to be a rocket scientist and a millionaire to pasteurize your own milk, for one thing. So then when I looked into the raw milk, then they say, well, if you do it, you know, and they never passed it. But they said I couldn't go have a route, advertise, you know, because I live in the middle of Junction City, in the middle of Marshfield, Stevens Point, Rapid, I mean, everywhere, half hour from everywhere. I thought, man, if I could get a route to deliver raw milk and just have a few cows on my farm, I might be able to save the farm. And I spent, you know, weeks researching it and visiting places and everything, and they just shot the whole thing down. It's impossible. There's no way I can make it.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Steve. Sorry, it's such a rough go for you. We're going to welcome more phone calls. We're talking about family farming this hour of the program and getting an idea of how tough it is to be a family farmer, as you just poignantly heard. John Kinsman is one of our guests. He's a farmer in Sauk County. He's founder and president of Family Farm Defenders. Kristen Cordett is owner of Blue Moon Community Farms. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We have an email that's come in that I'd like for both of you to address this. Kristen, why don't we start with you? We've talked during the hour about leveling the playing field. This email is from Sean in Baraboo. Can you give some examples of the type of things that might be done to level the playing field?
Well, I'll speak as a vegetable farmer. I've spent some time in the FSA office myself, and I've spent some time in the USDA service centers trying to access some of the funding that's available to other more traditional farms in the state. And I spent 2 years in FSA securing a loan for $40,000 to do some improvements to my farm. Now, farms that are in the commodity business or are fit more into the traditional mold of who FSA funds would find this ludicrous. It's a pretty small amount of money, and it's an incredible amount of time and resource that I spent convincing them that I had a farm that was worthy of funding. And that's one example from my own business that I've encountered. Also in the USDA service centers, there's EQIP program, the environmental quality and incentive program that helps to address resource needs, resource problems on farms and helps to offset the costs that farmers might incur to address natural resource concerns. And what ends up happening as you move through this process as an organic farmer, it's become much better in this last farm bill where the organic initiative sort of separates us out. But as an organic farmer, you come to find that while these practices that are funded by the USDA could certainly help your farm, you don't have those resource problems. Mm-hmm. You're taking good enough care of your land that that the concerns aren't there and they're unwilling to fund you for those practices. So it's been a very interesting process for me to be encountering and working with these traditional agricultural support agencies and finding that we're speaking different languages.
John, could you answer that too?
Yes. The other thing is that to level the playing field, we've kept track of grants for the past few years, I have, of grants from both the state of Wisconsin, different departments, Department of Ag and Consumer Protection, and the Commerce Department. And some of these larger farms are getting up to $1.5 million in loans and grants to expand.
Wow.
And so this goes on and on. And now I'm finding, it, right in my own neighborhood, they're going bankrupt after they got all that money. There's no cows there anymore. And one man was from Holland. He simply called from the bank last fall and said, or called from the airport and told the bank, take care of your cows. I'm gone.
Ugh.
He had $2 or $3 million. And who's holding the bag? It's we taxpayers.
Mm.
So it's the inordinate amount of money going to expand and to do the things that Kristen just talked about that's making it difficult for the small ones because mm-hmm. we don't get that. And we should be getting equal. If there's incentive, they should be equal.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Douglas from Winona, Minnesota. Hi, Douglas.
Hey, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
I'm good. Great topic today. Glad that people are talking about stuff like this. Being a chef and having the opportunity to buy a lot of local, I would say upwards of 80% of my proteins are all local. Duck, lamb, pork, beef, red deer. I'm able to work with a lot of local farmers. And to me, it's become, I mean, in the beginning it was all about organics, and now to me, the government has kind of twisted that, and larger corporations have kind of gotten on that bandwagon, and it's more about local, I think, than it is organic. I mean, a lot of the farmers I work with just don't go through the red tape and pay the government to be able to call themselves organic. When they are organic, they're not using pesticides, they're not using hormones and all that. But
Kristen.
Yes, certainly. I work with chefs in Madison as well, and I couldn't agree more, and the chefs that I work with, I think, couldn't agree more that what you're looking for in the culinary sense is freshness and sort of a taste of place, I think, is one way of putting it, that that you have unique products that represent the region that you're working in. And oftentimes when you're working with small growers that are serving local markets, you can find varieties and interesting products to be using that you might not find on a distributor's list, or you might not be able to access if you're going the traditional, you know, food industry distribution routes. And so I think that's really exciting, and I think that people like you who are making it a priority in your businesses and your restaurants are making it possible for people like me to make a living. And it also filters out into the community when people patronize those businesses, then shop the farmers markets. It's you definitely get exposure for your product, and hopefully it's a win-win for the restaurants and the farmers to have those relationships and make it worth the extra time and effort to get to know one another and work with the uncertainties of the season. It certainly requires some flexibility and understanding on the chef's part when you're working with local producers, and weather events can happen, crop failures can happen, and they can roll with that, and I appreciate that so much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Douglas, so much for the call. We're out of time, but I assume both of you will be front and center at Farm Aid 25th anniversary.
Looking forward to it.
John, you'll be there as well?
Yes, I will.
Yeah, great. Thank you both so much for being with us this hour. I feel like we could go hours and hours and hours with this discussion, but at least we got it started, and that's a good thing. Our thanks to John Kinsman. He's a farmer, organic farmer in Sauk County, founder and president of Family Farm Defenders. And we also thank Kristen Cordett, who's owner of Blue Moon Community Farms. Thanks, everybody, for your interest in the topic. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this interesting program. Chrissy Pease for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. We'll be with you again tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock, for more great conversation here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.